Hey, Andrea.
Yes, Dan.
Hey, Kevin.
I'm back.
Tell me, what's more fun than a barrel of monkeys?
One really big monkey.
Well, actually, I was going to say sex, but if that's what gets you through the night.
Why do I have to be a straight man here?
In any case, you fell right into it. In any case, unfortunately, we're not going to be talking about either of those things, but we are going to be talking about Mighty Peking Man, the epic Hong Kong knockoff of King Kong, on this episode of Mighty Movies Temple of Bad. So it's the least loved dish at Sichuan Garden, Mighty Peking Man. Also known, by the way, as Goliathon. And its original Hong Kong title, which I really love, is Jing Jing Wang. So that's the film we're talking about. Welcome to Mighty Movies Temple of Bad, the show where we celebrate films so awful they're practically a religious experience. I'm Dan Persons.
I'm Andrea Lipinski.
I'm Kevin Lauderdale.
And we do have Mighty Peking Man in our discussion for this particular month. It is available on Netflix if you do want to see it yourself. But in any case, you know, Kevin, this was your choice this month. And we had a little bit of a back and forth about this because actually your first choice was Battle Beyond the Stars, the Star Wars knockoff that was done by Corman, which was also a knockoff of The Seven Samurai. And I intervened on that one because that's actually a film that I'm kind of fond of. And so your second choice was Mighty Peking Man. And, you know, quite honestly, it's sort of the same situation here. This actually turned out to be a fairly lovable film. But before we get to that, tell us your reasoning in picking this, Kevin.
Well, after two films, huge swaths of which made no sense at all, I thought it was best to go classic, go back to our roots, giant monster movie. Giant monster movies observe the Aristotelian unities. You know you're going to get a guy in a suit. He is going to be stomping a city. There isn't going to be a subplot involving wacky diamond thieves. It's going to be, get me a monster, got the monster, wish I hadn't gotten the monster.
Oh, but there is a subplot, it turns out. And a couple of digressions, too.
Well, not every movie's perfect.
Yeah, I know. So, in any case, as I say, you know, this is a sort of break with what we've been doing. This is not like Birdemic. This is not like Sergeant Pepper's, where you get the feeling that everybody who wound up coming out of those projects were feeling kind of sad at the end. Really here, you got the sense that everybody was doing what they intended and wound up with what they intended. And the outcome is quite different, and the way I think that's reflected is that the distribution company for the re-release of this film, this is back from 1977, but the re-release for this film was done through Quentin Tarantino's Rolling Thunder distribution arm, which was the arm. I don't know if it's even active anymore, but it was the part of Quentin Tarantino's work where he was distributing the films that he watched when he was clerking at a video store, and they weren't necessarily good films, they weren't necessarily great films, but they were the films that somehow lodged in his mind. And so with that sort of introduction, let's start off with listening to a little bit of the trailer, shall we?
This creature is only an animal, and we can work out a plan to outwit him.
I know a hunter. He just lost his girl, and he wants to get away.
You want her? Well, take her.
Oh, God, you love her.
No, I hate her.
I guarantee he'd be the right man for us.
You're going to head our expedition into the Indian jungle, Johnny.
Anywhere you like, I'll go.
I am Johnny Fang.
Who are you?
Papa. Mama.
We'll put that stupid animal on show in Hong Kong. Just like the jungle.
There was a girl out in the jungle as well. He obeys her, does whatever she says.
Where is she now?
The only thing I know is she's dressed entirely in animal skins. That ought to narrow it down a little.
So here's the thing about this film. They're trying to do King Kong, but that's not the half of it. You do have the explorers going off to the Himalayas to find the mighty Peking Man, which is a gigantic monkey man. By the way, Peking, in case you didn't know, is the capital of China. It's in the north. The Himalayas are to the southwest of that, nowhere near Peking. Just thought you'd like to know how all of that ties together, by which I mean...
Dan, are you going to start arguing accuracy now?
Well, that's why I'm starting it off here. So once we genuinely vanish down the rabbit hole, we don't have to worry about this sort of stuff anymore.
At least the Himalayas are between India, which we see in this film, and China, which we see in this film. Forget the fact that it's a really long walk any way you're going.
Yes, that's true, too. So God knows how they get from one point to the other, but let's not worry about that. Along with the fact that since they are inland, I'll bring it up now, there is a boat journey at some point. We'll be getting to that. That's just one of the many conundrums of this film. Getting back to the story anyway, the group that goes out there includes the greedy businessman, because you have to have that, and a few other guys. The guy leading the group is played by Danny Lee, and he's named Johnny. Because this is around the time when the leads of all films imported from Hong Kong were called Johnny. Here's where we kind of break with the template. Bad things happen and everybody runs away except Johnny, and he'd be pretty much screwed. But lucky for him, he is rescued by a beautiful blonde jungle woman, Samantha, played by Evelyn Kraft, who will never be heard from again, by the way. I think she's making iPods in a factory somewhere now. Yeah, I know it's terrible, but it's probably true. But Samantha just happens to be friends with the mighty Peking Man. So this is kind of like Mighty Joe Young as well. Spoiler alert, no orphans in this one. In any case, Johnny and Samantha have some fun adventures in the jungle before Johnny convinces Sam that she just loved putting mighty Peking Man on display in Hong Kong. And she agrees because she's a jungle girl, something like that. So in any case, they do get Mighty Peking Man and Samantha to Hong Kong. You get the expected final act with everybody discovering how bad an idea that was. And there are lots of explosions and toy tanks. And so this is also a little like Godzilla film as well. And, you know, Andrea, we were talking before the show, and you made mention of the fact that you were rather agog with, shall we say, the narrative through line of this. Isn't that correct?
Did I say that?
Yeah.
Well, you were making a reference to a certain snake bite sequence.
Well, yeah.
I said that was one of many that made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, but. Let me explain one thing, because I know a little bit about this. The thing is that when you go into this, you have to understand what the Hong Kong film is, particularly at this particular time. What I heard of about Hong Kong film, particularly at this point, was that when these films got distributed, they didn't go into theaters and stay there for weeks or even, I think, for a week. They had something like a few days at most to get in everybody that they were going to get in, you know, and make their money, and then they'd be switched out. So what they had to do was they had to put enough shit in there so that everybody had to go and see the film. And so you get musical numbers, you get action sequences, you get monsters, you get all of that all packed into one film. And so it tends to be, this film runs something like 90 minutes. It's a frenetic 90 minutes that is all over the place. And just as an example, let me, I made a list. Let me explain what's in the first 15 minutes of Mighty Peking Man. You get an earthquake, a Mighty Peking Man attack, scenic shots of India, monkeys, bears, and elephant stampede, a flashback where Johnny's girlfriend cheats on him, a tiger attack, and people falling into quicksand. And by the way, the tiger attack and people falling into quicksand happen simultaneously. You know, that's just the 15 minutes. That's enough for one movie there. So, and Andrea, does that explain a little bit about the tone of this film?
Well, it's definitely a very busy movie. I mean, from the opening moment is like, pow, and now stuff's happening, and now more stuff's happening, and more stuff's happening. I mean, you know, I am definitely a fan of, you know, big stupid monster movies, and you see the big stupid monster right from the beginning, mm-hmm. which is also weird, because usually you have to wait for the big stupid monster, but oh no, you get him in all of his glory. And by the way, I'm guessing that there was at least two different costumes for the big stupid monster, because sometimes you see him in these varying close-ups and his facial expression is more or less smushed. So I guess I don't know if they had different costumes or just different masks or what, but it's like, whoa, what's happening? Whoa, what's happening? Oh my God, what's happening? So like even right within the first couple of minutes, you know, my notes are including Mighty Peking Man has some dental issues. And how did those villagers happen to have catapults ready? Which are not normally things that you think of. I will say that while I am a big fan of big stupid monster movies, this is not one of my favorite big stupid monster movies. But maybe that's because I'm seeing it more as the female perspective. So you know, on the one hand, it was like, oh fun, let's see this hot chick running around and in her diminutive outfit. And then it's like, oh, and now men are going to be jerks. Oh, now more men are going to be jerks. Oh, and wow, attempted rape scene. Thank you, movie. You know, so, you know, so let me just, spoiler alert, say that I have never been so happy to see a giant stupid monster step on somebody, but still.
Well, clearly you weren't in the room when they came around to the sequences that were put in there expressly for you, Andrea. We'll get to those.
Do they involve the cheetahs?
No, they do not.
Do they involve crying elephants?
No, they involve the romantic triangle. If you don't remember that.
Oh, okay. So not the romantic triangle with the cheetah.
No. It's the other one. We'll talk a little bit about that because that's one of my favorite sequences.
You mean when one third of the triangle is much larger than the other two?
No. Not that.
As you see, dear listeners, there is much romantic entanglements, much confusion, and animals and big stupid monsters.
Right. But I will say this. I mean, you know, there is obviously the relationship growing between Johnny and Samantha. And then there's Mighty Peking Man, who has been taking care of Samantha all this time. And you know what, Kevin? You know, it seemed to me that Mighty Peking Man was pretty progressive as far as that thing as those things are concerned. He seemed to be okay with Johnny and Samantha.
Well, he saved her. He saved both their lives. Yeah. I guess he had a lot of experience with women. He must be the one who's been shaving her legs and plucking her eyebrows. Out there in the jungle, she's got the lip gloss. She's got the whole shebang. Somebody who basically was raised by wild animals, she looks like she stepped out of Farrah Fawcett Major's school of makeup and costume design. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for some, I guess he's not that jealous, Mighty Peking Man, because he's happy to provide medicine to save people's lives. And when Samantha says, or grunts or something, let's all go to town and you can be on display, he provides, he carries and provides the transportation. He's a very progressive sort of fellow. I'm glad you explained the Hong Kong aesthetic to me, because that smooths out. I had an epiphany. I did a 180 on this film with regard to the opening. At first I thought, okay, this looks like a movie. It's obviously a ripoff of the Dino De Laurentiis King Kong.
Yeah.
And at first I thought, okay, I bet it was made by somebody who went to go see that movie but missed the first half hour of that movie. Because if you come in half an hour, what do you see? Explorers looking for they found a scantily clad girl and a giant ape. You don't know that they're looking for the girl. You don't know why she's there. And I said, no. The makers of this film saw the Dino De Laurentiis King Kong and then decided, like I did, that the first half hour was boring. So they went straight to the chase. Uh-huh. Yeah, just like you said, pow, you're in there. Monkey, girl, cheetahs.
Yeah. No fucking around in Hong Kong film.
Okay, I want to bring something very important to our listeners' attention. And that is that Kevin Lauderdale was able to discuss the Mighty Peking Man while using the words Aristotelian and epiphany.
And English majors, yes!
Those are words which I would not normally associate with a big, stupid monster movie. And by the way, you know, when you see Samantha in her itty-bitty little outfit, one of the first things that I noticed was that her bikini top is tied in the back. are we also presuming that the Mighty Peking Man tied the ties on the back of her outfit?
You know, this is the kind of film where you could presume that Samantha is double jointed.
Anything is possible at this point. Although, I mean, who has been going out and buying all the makeup and eyeliner and lip gloss? That is the larger question.
Crushing berries, crushing flowers.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that caught me at the beginning, and here again, this is part of the Hong Kong aesthetic, is that there is actually a triangle subplot that shows up twice in the film. But the first time we see it is the reason why Johnny is agreeing to go on this mission is because he has just recently broken up with his girlfriend. And in other films, it's enough that they say, you know, that they had a disagreement or he caught her cheating on him, whatever. No, in this particular film, they have to have the flashback. And it is one of the wonderful sequences. And I think it owes as much to the translation as anything. Essentially, Johnny catches his girlfriend sleeping with his brother, and his brother has the probably the best line in the film, and I've got to paraphrase it because I'm not sure this is exactly correct, but the line is Johnny catches them and his brother is cowering in the bed and says, "It just started as a joke."
Yes, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Which is probably the worst excuse in the way it's one of those Spock type situations. You know, in other words, it has the virtue of never being tried.
Well, like Johnny's going to say, "Oh, okay. Oh, that's fine. It started out as a joke. You two just keep doing what you were doing." But see, here's the thing. Okay.
Just fooling around. And whoops, I slipped and my penis just wound up in her vagina.
Well, we could. Are you putting together a gag reel for this? So. We can isolate the clip of you saying that. but see, here's the thing. This is why I got understandably confused when you said, "How did you feel about the love triangle?"
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't even thinking of Johnny, the ex-girlfriend, and the brother. There could also be the tension between Johnny, the ex-girlfriend, and Samantha. Or Johnny, Samantha, and the Peking Man. Or Johnny, Samantha, and the Cheetah. Because I'm sorry, the Cheetah was there while that makeout music was playing.
I love that cheetah, too. You know, one of the things I got to credit the filmmakers here for is that, you know, in other films, you know, they find ways to cheat having the animals in the film. They use stock footage or whatever. In this film, they actually have animals, and very often you can see the animals are on the same set with the actors, but the cheetah, I think, was my favorite because there are many sequences with Samantha frolicking with that cheetah, and there are a couple of shots with her draping the cheetah over her shoulders and spinning the animal, and my only thought was, that son of a bitch must have been drugged to the gills.
Except he runs away. He was always watching for that. When she puts him down, he runs off. There were a lot of times. There was a tiger wrestling scene that's obviously real and live. There were a lot of times during this film where I thought, oh, my God, that animal is going to kill that person. And it didn't happen. I got to give it props for using real animals, real wild animals.
But I suspect that the ASPCA was not, or the SPCA was not present on set, and the dosage was drugged up, was dialed up to Keith Richards level.
Aw, but that's one of the things that was weird, though. I was checking to look at the credits at the end to see if they had that message that says animals were not harmed in the making of this picture. At least the Netflix version, there are no credits.
Yes.
So I looked for that. So my basic understanding of this film is animals were definitely harmed in the making of this picture.
Yeah.
And I guarantee they were also confused in the making of this picture. It's like confuse a cat. Why on earth does she keep grabbing that cheetah and swinging it around in circles? What is that about?
They like it.
I'm sure. I'm sure that's what they kept telling her. Oh, don't worry about it. They like it.
Yeah, there probably is no Hong Kong Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, Andrea.
Yeah.
No one will be seated during the gripping cheetah swinging scene.
We should actually describe it. It's one of the highlights of the film. She's holding the cheetah under its front. Its back is to her chest.
Yeah.
Her arms are under its front paws.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she's using it as a shield.
Or a stole.
Swing it right.
You know, it's like you know, she has found a way around PETA by just using a live animal.
One of many bewildering scenes in this picture.
Yeah, I know. And of course, in the midst of, by the way, all of this is happening after Samantha rescues Johnny. There is a fairly long sequence that shows sort of the Johnny's idyllic life with Samantha while he's recovering from his, what were they, wounds or something? I'm not sure now.
Well, he fell from a height and then rolled down a cliff, a la Homer Simpson.
That's a second love montage in this movie. First, there's a love montage with him and his soon-to-be ex-girlfriend.
Right.
And there's a love montage with Samantha and the animals in the jungle. Any movie with two love montages worries me.
But this, what worried me more was that the makeout music started before the love montages. She's just like wandering around, and I'm like, why are we listening to this music? Are we in the audience supposed to start making out? What's going on? And then, of course, by the time it's, Johnny and Samantha and the cheetah, then there is no question as to whether or not this is makeout music, because it is poignantly named, Could It Be I'm in Love? repeat.
But in the midst of this idyllic tryst, there has to be a snake in the Garden of Eden. And that is actually a snake. And it's one of the memorable snake sequences. Yes, Samantha falls victim to a snake bite. And where do they decide to bite her? To have the snake bite her? You know, not her arm, not her shoulders, her thigh.
Way up.
Way up on her thigh. So, you know,
her inner thigh.
So
we are talking about danger zone territory here.
And of course, Johnny then embarks upon the highway to the danger zone. You set me up for it. I wasn't expecting it.
And then heroically, let me try to save your life. Heroically. Oh, boy.
Yep. I'd always been told that if somebody is bit by a snake, you're supposed to cut the bite spot a little bit and suck the poison out. Yeah, and that's what he does. Are you telling me that my Boy Scout training has failed me here?
No, absolutely not. And clearly we understand now how men in Hong Kong audiences are able to orchestrate their wish fulfillment, you know?
You mean they just keep snakes around?
Yeah, just like, well, I know what I'd do if I was up on that screen. If only I had an excuse to do it.
Uh-huh. No, so, I know how they orchestrate their wish fulfillment. They just keep rewinding and rewatching this film. Especially certain scenes of this film. I mean, and okay, I am not a guy, for the record. But even I had to rewind this film several times to go, oh my God, did she just come out of that outfit? And yes. Periodically she does.
Yeah,
my Lord. The super glue does not hold.
By the way, as far as that sequence is concerned, you know, Kevin, we're talking about the rather surprising makeup job that Samantha was able to do on herself in the middle of the jungle. And the thing that I noted was how unusually blonde she was. And at the very least, when Johnny is doing that, he was able to find out whether the ground foliage matched the palm fronds.
Oh, nice.
Thank you. Took me hours to come up with that one.
What I don't know about Hong Kong cinema, I would fill whole volumes, but I'm certain that's got to be one of the, some people call them cliches. I call them the demands of the genre. Mm. That there's a pretty blonde girl in pretty much every movie. Am I right or am I wrong?
Not completely. I have to go through some of the older films to be sure. I think this was somewhat unusual in that regard. I got to check that, though. This was, I think, looking at having seen some other Hong Kong films of the period, this was a prestige production. You know, they went on location. They clearly spent the money on, believe it or not, as cheesy as the costume is, it's still a fairly elaborate costume for this sort of thing. They did the rear screen projections and all of that. So this is a fairly high scale production for them, you know, matching clearly what they what King Kong was supposed to be at that point. The other sequence that struck me, by the way, is that in the middle of this, we get a cut back to Hong Kong and the craven businessman who ran away and abandoned Johnny. And there is a sequence with him and the reporters where the reporters are going to him. So do you think you'll be seeing Johnny again? The guy's going, nah, I don't think so. I think he's lost forever. And, you know, it's for one thing, it is the fact that, you know, usually, you know, there's a no man left behind kind of approach to thing. But it's also the fact that the reporters don't hang him for that.
Well, or the fact that nobody brings up when he says, oh, well, no, he's not going to be able to get out of there alive. He doesn't know the jungle. So why did you hire him as your tour guide?
That's right. He's the expert explorer they had to have.
Yeah, you hired him to lead your expedition, Bright Eyes. What are you talking about?
So in any case, eventually Johnny is able to convince Samantha, and it doesn't take a lot of convincing, by the way. He's able to convince Samantha to bring Mighty Peking Man to Hong Kong. And here again, remember that this is all inland on China. So, of course, they decide to transport Mighty Peking Man by boat.
Because that's what they did in Dio De Laurentiis, yeah.
Yes.
You thought he was going to walk there?
Well, he did walk from his original place of abode to the place where he got on the boat, and we wonder how far a walk that was.
Yeah, so...
Well, honestly, I'm kind of bewildered about the entire point of the boat to begin with. I mean, you'd think that that was just the homage to King Kong because King Kong was brought over on a boat. Because most of the whole scene of him being on the boat is like, why? Just to see that he's in chains and so that she can say, oh, that's sad. He shouldn't be in chains. And they say, no, if he's not in chains, he's going to tip the boat over. And then there's this storm. And then he's – and I'm like, what? What's going on? What's going on? And there was – I didn't really see the point of it. A dramatic tension?
Well, here's the thing, and I think it's sort of a chicken and the egg sort of thing. Give me your thoughts on this. Is it that they have the boat as an excuse for the hurricane sequence, or do they have a hurricane sequence as an excuse for having the boat?
Well, whatever it is, it allows him to save the day. We get to build up, just in terms of plot beats, we get to build up sympathy and we get to really like the guy, as if he didn't like him already. He's given over his girlfriend. He's providing medicine. And now he's going to save everybody when the huge storm comes.
Wait a minute. How does he do that?
I hope I'm not having a weird flashback. Isn't there a giant storm? And doesn't he, like, slide to one side in order to balance the boat out?
I don't think so. I don't think he does anything. The way I remember the sequence is that there's a hurricane sequence, and then it's over.
Okay, that was how I remembered it, and I saw this movie twice.
Yeah.
So I saw it, and I was like, okay, so there's a hurricane, and that means he's going to capsize and escape? Oh, no, wait. So that doesn't happen, so why are we watching this?
The way
I saw it was like, this happened, and there's a hurricane, and then we're done. And I'm like, all right, well, that was kind of pointless. And then they all wind up there anyway. Now, I read several reviews. And in the reviews, they said, well, it was good because they were on the boat and then they unchained his arm so that when the boat hits that giant rock, he's able to push the boat off from the rock and save them. Now, did that not happen? Because I don't remember seeing it.
That's not happening in my version. Let me point out once again that there are several different versions.
We all watched the Netflix streaming version.
Right.
So I'm thinking that maybe in like the earlier, you know, version that was subtitled instead of dubbed or something, that maybe that was something that was cut. So maybe that's an extra reason why this film seems less coherent to us.
Yeah, that may very well be. I mean, in this particular version of the film, it's very much like the MST3K thing. Our quick and pointless plot cul-de-sac is over. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, but there may be another version out there where it does make sense. Clearly, it wasn't cut that way for this version.
Right.
So, in any case, so they do get to Hong Kong. We can talk about the monster rampage and all of that. But before we even get to that, before we get to the stuff where Mighty Peking Man is being tortured, there is a sidetrack as Johnny takes Samantha to see a TV studio because she's never seen one before.
Introduced by one of my favorite lines. By the way, I have many favorite lines in this.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But one of my favorites is when he says to her, "Do you want to see a broadcasting station?" I go, "Come on!" Up until a few days ago, she didn't even know how doors worked. She doesn't know what a broadcasting station is. And then they bring her into the broadcasting station where they sit there in the audience watching this musical number that sounds suspiciously like The Hustle, or else I just felt like I should be dancing The Hustle while I was watching it. And it was just like really like, okay, wait, we're going to have to watch this whole song? Okay. And you have 10 cameras trained on the singer and not one of them is shooting a close-up? Okay, far be it from me to question your directing style.
Samantha's very accepting of technology. She does not freak out at the tiny people see on windows all over the place. And also, she apparently understands later on how TV broadcasting works. She must have picked up a lot, because when she sees the Mighty Peking Man on TV later on, she understands that he's far away in a distance, and what she's seeing is stuff that's going on far from where she is.
Mm-hmm. I have a theory.
Ah, ooh.
She only looks like she's dumber than a bag of hammers, but actually she is a super genius. I mean, how quickly does she, reacclimate to the English language?
By the way, you've got to say it like Wile E. Coyote.
Super genius.
Thank you. And, just one other thing is that, I was talking about them putting everything into these films. Earlier in the film, we do have this flashback Johnny's girlfriend cheating with his brother. Yeah, and, at that point, it's introduced by Johnny saying something about the fact that she wanted to get into show business. And I thought, knowing Hong Kong film, I thought, okay, here comes the flashback, and they'll have the musical number here. And I was sort of disappointed because they didn't have that. So when they go to the studio, I go, hallelujah, the musical number. They finally got around to throwing that in. But in the middle of that, we go back to the soap opera again, because Johnny goes backstage to encounter his girlfriend and have this really melodramatic discussion with him. And the thing that stands out with that sequence is that, we've got the build up, we've seen the adventure in the jungle, we've seen the Mighty Peking Man being transported to Hong Kong, and we're all set for the finale. And then we get this scene, and it has nothing to do with anything.
Are you questioning the auteur's vision here?
I am suggesting the auteur needs to renew his prescription on his glasses. So, in any case, we've got that. Eventually, we do get around to the monster rampage. There are several notable things about this. I mean, my favorite is that it does get around to invoking the Godzilla type monster rampage, and they do a fairly nice job with it. They've got the guy there, and the buildings are blowing up and stuff like that. And this is the period where, like, when they shot these things, they had the guy in the suit on the set, and they had the shit blowing up all around him, and it looks like it's maybe inches away from him. It's got to be at most a few feet away from him. And I always wonder, were they looking after the actors with this stuff? Were they looking after the guy in the monster suit with this?
Yeah, and this suit especially, I'm sure it was pretty damn flammable.
Yeah, my thought always was, the director was with the guy, and he's saying, okay, you go over there and we're going to blow the shit up around you. And this will be safe, right? Oh, yeah, sure. It'll look great. Don't worry about it. Yeah, but it's safe, right? Don't worry about it. Just go over there. We'll blow it up. Keep the car running.
Yeah, but Dan,
those were huge sets. That was there were clothes hanging, little miniature clothes hanging on the little miniature balconies, little miniature air conditioners. Yeah. That was a detailed set. This is not a cheap project. Lots of time on that. I was impressed.
But there is a major difference between the Mighty Peking Man and Godzilla, which is that when Godzilla is near humans or near monsters or near buildings, he is always the same approximate relative size. And here it's like, wait, is he 10 stories tall? Yeah. Is he 2 stories tall? Is he bigger than a bus? Is he the same size as the boat? Is he big enough to knock over buildings, but then he's climbing a building, and then his hand is this. It was like just I was getting, you know, vertigo watching this, going, oh, how big is he?
There are scale issues, definitely, and it depends, I think, a lot on whether the Mighty Peking Man is actually on a set or whether he's on a rear projection screen. You know, so it varies. I don't think there are any actual match shots in this, so that didn't count. But, you know, yeah, they weren't exactly being immaculate in making sure that the scale matched up.
That's a kind way of putting it.
You know, and you know, but you know, does anybody want to talk about Samantha's plight with the Craven businessman at this point?
Well, I already said that I'm very happy that he died, but I celebrated my joy of womanhood by happily watching him get smushed.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, that's the triggering incident.
Yeah.
If he hadn't been attacking Samantha and she hadn't torn open the curtain and the Peking Man hadn't seen her being attacked, he probably would have stayed in his cage for a few more reels.
Yeah.
It's really his anger, his protective instincts that cause him to rampage and start tearing the city apart looking for her.
Yeah.
But, you know, that businessman, Lu Tian, did not have very good, you know, self-preservation instincts. I mean, first off, why did he keep picking places to go that were right at eye level to the Peking Man? Why does he drag her into the car to drive her away from the Peking Man, and then 2 minutes later, they're driving straight towards him? I mean, there was some, you know, very bewildering stuff there also in terms of, okay, you know, let me attempt to attack this woman and let me do it right here, right at eye level, in the one direction that the Peking Man who's in captivity could possibly be looking. Let me do it right there. So, yet another reason that he deserved to die.
And so we do get to the finale of the film. And of course, like the previous versions of King Kong, you have to have the sequence where the monster scales the tallest building in the city. Here's the problem with that. This is Hong Kong, okay? And I checked this out, and it turns out at that time, the tallest building in the city, which was completed like a few years prior to this, it was the Jardine House. That's 52 stories high. Mm. We're not talking Empire State here. You know, this would be a mid-sized building in New York City. So,
yeah, that's peanuts compared to you know, the Empire State Building or anything. You know, huge and dramatic.
Yeah.
Right. Again, also confusing the whole issue of the scale of, you know, mm-hmm. just how big this monster is, but the climactic scene then loosely includes some of my other favorite lines from the very dramatic and power-mad British guy who is controlling the armed forces. And it's all like, kill the Peking Man, kill him, kill him, kill him, kill mm-hmm. him. Although he literally says, and this is what he literally says because I rewound it and wrote it down, all units, you are to concentrate your fire and also intensify it. I do love that. Anything to kill Peking Man. Anything to kill this Peking Man. Kill the Peking Man by any means you can. Kill the Peking Man by any means. That's an order. What?
Operatic.
Yeah, it's practically lyrics, aren't they?
Was he getting paid by the word? I mean, how did he manage to say so much without actually saying anything? And like, could you be more vague? What do you mean, concentrate your fire? Where? On what? On the big monkey? Yeah, I think I could figure that out.
Just
and
a
also
reminder.
Intensify it? What? Yeah. What?
For young view listeners, Hong Kong was under British control for 99 mm-hmm. years and only ended in 1999?
Something like that. Yeah, Hong Kong was still a British colony. And one of the interesting things here again about Hong Kong film is how a lot of the films actually reflect the situation. There are a lot of, particularly a lot of martial arts films, a lot of the Jackie Chan films, where one of the plots running through them are British soldiers looting the country of its treasures and things like that. So there's an interesting political subtext to all that.
As bad as some of the Asians are, it's interesting that the guy who's really bad is the British guy.
Yeah.
Now he's bloodthirsty and power mad. Yeah. I think he was the police commissioner.
And he was especially bloodthirsty in that he promises not to
yes.
to hold fire.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they calm him down, they're like, okay, keep firing.
Yeah.
Because he'll be easier to hit now?
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah, he's calmed down now. Let's really kill him.
Kill him, yes. Is there anything else anybody wants to talk about with Mighty Peking Man?
You talk about the title.
Okay, yes, that's right. Yeah, you wanted to fill us in on that. So go ahead, Kevin.
Just to clarify, Peking Man was an early hominid, an example of Homo erectus. He predated Neanderthal. Peking Man lived approximately a million years ago. Fossils were found near Peking in the 1920s and 30s, which is why this particular group of fossils is called the Peking Man. It's probably something like Homo erectus pekinus. I imagine that he was chosen, even though real Peking Man would have been smaller than human height and would have been more human than monkey. I think it gave the producers a sort of local hero, if you will. It's our own Chinese early mammal monster. You're not going to make a Hong Kong movie about Sasquatch. Instead, you get to choose your local boy.
Yeah.
But you're saying that the original Peking Man was not 10 stories tall?
No, original Peking Man was, 4.5-5 feet high, a lot of the early hominids. So that's why this is the mighty Peking Man. He's the really big one. Yeah, no mammals were that big.
Gotcha.
So if you had the original one, you could have cast Tom Cruise as the lead.
Oh, dear.
Sorry.
The monkey is jumping up and down on the couch.
Aw. Goodness gracious.
Thank you for picking that up.
There you go.
Is there anything else we want to talk about?
I had two more favorite lines I just wanted to throw in.
Go for it.
One is, in the midst of all the common folk yelling back and forth with the news about the Peking Man being on the rampage, there's some random comic relief guy who hears the news that this giant monkey is on the loose, and he goes, "But my wife is a gorilla too."
Those people were all white. That
right.
was the white round eye comic relief scene.
Right. It's like, thank you, random comic relief guy. But also, speaking of white people in this foreign Asian country, what my other favorite line is when Samantha has run off and Johnny is telling the authorities that there's this woman who can control the Peking Man, and the guy says, "Well, what can you tell us about her?" And he says, "The only thing I know is she's dressed entirely in animal skins." No. No, Johnny, that's not the case. How about that she is a tall, blonde, white woman? How about the fact that her name is Samantha? Anything? I mean, he probably saw enough of her during their snuggling time that he could point out any and all of her scars or identifying features. What do you mean, all I know is she's dressed entirely in animal skins?
Clearly, Johnny knows how to prioritize.
Yeah, well.
Something that threw me off is, okay, so Peking Man is brought to Hong Kong to be put on display. And so we see him basically engaging in feats of strength against Tonka toys. Mm-hmm. He's chained, he's pulling tractors, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And imagining things, did people bring their own tomatoes to throw at him?
You say, yeah, of course.
You're going to go see the giant animal, and you're going to bring things specifically designed to tease, taunt, and anger him.
No, you don't understand. No, they didn't bring Rotten Tomatoes with them. They picked them up at the concession stand on the way in.
Get your tomatoes, throw them at the monkey.
Well, this is also, I don't remember if it was tomatoes or it was oranges, but, you know, it was some kind of cheap produce they were able to, you know, easily accessible. But that ties into my, I mean, what I see is the same problem in King Kong and any other giant monster in captivity movie. They are always going, hey, we have this giant monster in captivity. Come now, buy tickets, and the tickets sell out. Why are the people buying tickets exactly? To sit in Hong Kong Stadium and point?
Yeah.
There's a lot of pointing going on in this movie.
There's a very low bar for entertainment in Hong Kong, clearly.
I mean, they keep going, it's sold out. For what? Yeah. If it was going to be on TV anyway, why did you have to go and buy a ticket to Hong Kong so that you could be there to throw the oranges or tomatoes or whatever else you have?
Look, monkey. Ooh.
Ooh, that was worth $20.
So, dinner?
Did anybody, I'm sure you spotted this, but I wonder what it meant. When Samantha's running around town, there is a poster for the Mighty Peking Man, which looks almost exactly like the poster for the Dino De Laurentiis movie. Was that, as they say, and there's a Woody Allen movie where somebody asks him about something, and he says, was that an homage to so-and-so? He says, no, we just stole the idea outright. Was that like a nod? Hi there, Dino. Yes, we're ripping off your movie. What was that there for? I mean,
I'm just presuming that when they instigated this thing, they came up with the poster first and they said, well, you know, we've got it. We're going to work the hell out of it. You know, put it in the film somewhere.
Okay. You can write it off.
Yeah, exactly.
I say homage or ripoff, six of one, half dozen of another.
Yeah. So anything else anybody wants to say about Mighty Peking Man?
Lord, it's doofy. Does that cover everything?
Kevin, would you concur?
It's goofy, but a lot of people worked really hard on it.
Yeah. Here again, I point out there is a distinct difference between this film and the two other films that we saw before. And in that, you know, I think, you know, what the people were what came out of it was what the people were putting into it. They knew what they were doing. They got out of it exactly what they wanted to get out of it. So, you know, if it's accidentally doofy, if it's unintentionally funny, but it's unintentionally funny.
It's sincere.
I would agree with that word. Yeah. You know, and the unintentional humor is not because it was done by a bunch of inepts. You know, so there's the difference there, and it does make a difference. So, in any case, now that we've covered that, I think we should sum up with a few things. The first being that we convey to the audience what we learned from this movie. So, Andrea, what did you learn from Mighty Peking Man?
Okay. Are we going through our list? If we have a list, are we going around?
Well, you know what? Let's go straight through. I've only got one. How about you, Kevin?
I've got one or possibly two.
Okay. Okay, so let's do it this way. Let's go around and then you two bat it back and forth. So, Andrea, give us your first.
Peking Man was not man-sized as previously thought.
Kevin?
We're way off. I learned a couple things. First of all, I learned in honor of the celebration of the 200th anniversary of the War of 1812, yes, the British are always the most evil.
Cool. Okay, and mine is, and Andrea, I'm glad you brought this up. If you're attempting to rape a woman in the sightlines of a giant raging monkey man with whom she has a psychic rapport, you clearly haven't thought through all the ramifications of the act.
Ah!
Andrea?
Cheetahs don't mind being swung around in circles.
And Kevin, wrap it up.
If you want to blow up a building, rely on Mobil brand gasoline for all your monster detonation needs.
Ha! All hail product placement.
Oh, I have one more. A security force that wears shorts is less than intimidating.
Very good. And before we get out of this completely, we do have to play the drinking game. So, Andrea, start us off with the rules.
You should take a drink every time you see something happen on screen. My first is take a drink every time you see stock footage.
Kevin?
Take a drink every time there's a model shot of something that just as easily could have been actually found in nature or built full scale, probably at less cost.
And anytime anyone demonstrates an irrational fear of a rear projection screen, take a drink.
Yay. Take a drink every time you see blood that is the color of crimson paint.
Anytime a musical number makes you want to start singing the theme to The Love Boat, take a drink.
Anytime Samantha is wounded in a way that's likely to make Johnny say, yes, take a drink.
Take a drink every time you hear sexy makeout music.
Take a drink every time somebody is stepped on.
Anytime a businessman proves what a righteous tool he is, donate $10 to Occupy Wall Street.
Take a drink every time you can tell that a building or a vehicle is really a model.
Kevin, you got any more?
I think I'm out.
Okay. Okay. And my last one, I've only got one more, and it's fairly elaborate. Anytime there's a sequence where if this were a B-movie in the 1940s, you'd see a couple of explorers on a fake set point and say, look, followed by stock footage of a lion. But in this film, it's clearly on location with real animals. Go to the nearest tiki bar and have a fancy cocktail with a spear of pineapple and an umbrella.
Wow.
Yes, thank you.
That is elaborate.
I'm winded. Andrea, do you have any more?
I have one more.
Okay.
Take a drink every time you wonder how that outfit stays on.
Very good.
Not elaborate, but to the point.
And that will leave you good and polluted for Mighty Peking Man. And that'll be it for our discussion, I think. So before we get out of here, let me just let you know what we're going to be talking about in the next episode so that you can watch it along with us and, you know, and be ready for the scintillating conversation. And next Temple of Bad is going to be our 4th of July special. And for that, I think we go patriotic and watch David Zucker drink the conservative Kool-Aid with his patriotic comedy. I put the question mark in there. It's called American Carol. And boy, you better be ready for this one. So, in any case, that's it for Temple of Bad. Andrea, do you want to bring us up to date on what's doing at BeABetterBookTalker.com?
Oh, swing by, be a better book talker, listen to some book talks, get some reading recommendations, and celebrate my 1 year anniversary as a podcast.
Is it really?
It is.
Yay! Congratulations. Gee, and I didn't buy you anything.
Aw.
Sorry.
I don't know what the 1 year podcast anniversary gift is, but.
Yeah.
You know what it is?
What?
It's inviting me on a new podcast. Aw.
Aw. Andrea? You want to be on another podcast?
No, silly. I meant this one.
Oh, okay. moving on. Kevin, you've got your stuff over at kevinlauderdale.livejournal.com, and you've also got It Has Come to My Attention over at The Chronic Rift. What's going on with that stuff?
I'm reviewing all sorts of pop culture items. By the time this gets up, yeah, we'll be okay. The last thing we covered on It Has Come to My Attention was Detective D and the Mystery of the Phantom Flame, also a Hong Kong movie, which I discussed not only that film, but the whole subgenre of Detective D literature. The July entry for It Has Come to My Attention is going to be a review of the Blu-ray version of Yellow Submarine. So swing on over. You can subscribe on iTunes to Chronic Rift. You can go to chronicrift.com. You can't miss it. It'll be all over the place.
I've got a hole in me pocket. So, and it's chronicriff.com, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And so, that'll be it for the show. Andrea Lipinski, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Kevin Lauderdale, thank you as well.
Thanks for having me back.
And I'm Dan Persons. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And until next time, may a bad film be the worst thing to happen to you. We've got forsaken. We've got forsaken. God was sleeping. I wonder if God was sleeping.